Welcome to Agency of the Month Air Force, sponsored by HP Enterprise. Here's your host, Tom Tenen.
The Defense Department has a Byzantine process that's meant to ensure it only acquires what it really needs. But there's no comparable set of guardrails to make sure it doesn't get rid of things it does need. That's one conclusion of auditors at the Government Accountability Office. They fault the Air Force for not doing enough homework before it proposed to get rid of the A-10 fighter. John Pendleton is Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at GAO. He tells Federal News Radio's Jared Servu the Air Force didn't adequately account for all the missions the A-10 performs before it decided to ground it.
That really is the most important question here. There will be a bit of a lag there, assuming the F-35 comes on. But everyone, let's talk a little bit about what the A-10 is and what all it does. I mean, it's iconic, right? It's a flying tank. It has the Gatling gun in the front. It's beloved by the many ground troops that it's supported in combat. And everyone knows it for the close air support that it does. But with precision-guided munitions and unmanned systems, we can drop bombs from bombers now and support ground troops and from UASs, and we got different ways to perform CAS, and that's what everyone is focused on, but the A-10 does more, and the CAS community that supports it does more, like combat search and rescue. When a pilot is down, the A-10 pilots and the aircraft are the ones that typically coordinate the rescue mission, and they provide cover for the rescue helicopters that would come in, and it's not clear how the Air Force will perform this mission even after they get the F-35. And then there's the issue of the fact that the CAS pilots focus on these missions, right? Compared to an F-16 pilot or an F-35 pilot, an A-10 pilot does 22 close air support sorties in a year to be qualified, where an F-16 pilot does maybe 12 because they're training lots of other missions. So the idea that the multi-role fighters will fill in all the gaps, I'm just not sure that's right.
Yeah, and I want to talk about specific capabilities a little bit more in a minute, but I think more fundamentally, no one knows the full extent of the capability gaps because the Air Force doesn't really have a process for coming up with a baseline for what its overall fighter requirements are. Is that fair?
No, that really is an issue. It was an issue for us here because, you know, GAO likes its criteria. We don't want to just make up things. We want to look and see what the rules are, and requirements very often set the foundation for a program. And we really found that the Air Force doesn't have clearly stated capacity requirements for close air support or the other missions that the A-10 does. It sounds like a simple question, how much do you need? But apparently it's not a simple answer. And the lack of such requirements makes it really difficult to evaluate the impact of any shortfall.
And not just requirements for close air support, but requirements or any kind of process for evaluating requirements in light of any kind of divestment decision.
Well, how are you going to mitigate the impact is the main question, right? I mean, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And what we were hoping to see is detailed analysis about how you would do CSAR Sandy or Forward Air Control Airborne, which is another mission that the department does, or the fast attack, against swarm boats. And we just didn't see the detailed analysis that we were hoping for, even on the classified side.
And it seems like one of the issues that you guys were getting at is some of those secondary missions have been maybe even being neglected in the training environment because there's been such a focus on the close air support capabilities of the A-10.
I think that that is possibly true, but we were more concerned that it wasn't clear to us how we would do some of the things even after we got the F-35 in. The Air Force has stood up some integration groups and things to study that, which I think is sort of a tacit acceptance that some work needs to be done, which is a step in the right direction. But it just wasn't clear to us how they were going to meet these other missions.
How much does the decision to push the A-10 retirement proposal a little further into the out years mitigate some of these capability gaps to the extent that we understand the capability gaps?
Oh, I think it, we couldn't do that analysis because you don't have the requirements to give you a precise answer,
mm-hmm.
but the A-10 is the best at many of these things. I mean, it just absolutely is. And A-10 pilots are the ones that really focus on this, the doctors of CAS, they've been called. And by CAS, they mean the things like combat search and rescue, Sandy. That it's a catch-all term that means all the things that these that these A-twin pilots and squadrons do.
John Pendleton is Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at GAO, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. I'm Tom Temin.
Government organizations have always sought to serve our nation's citizens, but the rapid evolution of technology and sophistication of cyber threats have made this mission more complex. HPE has the people, the capabilities, and experience to deliver IT solutions to the right place at the right time, securely. HPE Enterprise Services is proud to partner with governments to transform their IT to better support the millions of citizens who rely on them every day. To learn how HPE can help you, visit hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next.
You're listening to John Pendleton, Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at GAO, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu.
Getting back to one of the issues that you mentioned before, just the topic of the Air Force simply not having a good methodology for thinking about requirements that are going to go unfilled if it decides to divest something. How big a problem is that? To what extent is that a DOD-wide problem, I guess, is my question.
I think that really is the heart of the issue. If you step back from just the A-10, I mean, the department has a lot of aging things, and there's going to be more and more decision points where they have to decide at what point to let go of the old stuff to make room for the newer, more capable stuff. And especially if you're still using the old stuff a lot. You know, like I said, we like our criteria at GAO, and we had a problem from the get-go here on this because there's no specific rules for divesting multi-million dollar platforms. I mean, everyone's aware that it takes several acts of Congress to buy something, to acquire something, and lots of laws and regulations. But the services, by contrast, can decide to divest something as part of a budget drill, which is what happened here. The Air Force didn't really want to let go of the A-10. They just didn't have enough money. They couldn't make it fit in the palm.
Sure.
And we saw something similar a couple of years back on with the Navy, when the Navy proposed to retire early some cruisers and dock landing ships. And that was another case where Congress stopped them because they just didn't feel like they'd adequately made their case. So we stepped back and we made a broader recommendation here that basically said, DOD, we think you ought to put some guidance out about, you know, the kinds of things you want to consider in these divestment proposals, because it made it difficult for us to evaluate, and it leaves the services a little bit vulnerable when people ask questions. I mean, Oh, it's an oversimplification, but, you know, we have acquisition rules so we don't buy things we don't need. Our argument is we need clear divestment rules so we don't get rid of stuff that we do need. And again, I'm not trying to describe a Byzantine process on the other side that equals the acquisition process. but not having any guidance, I'm not sure is acceptable either.
You mentioned that you noticed this with a Navy program a couple years ago, but as far as the absence of that process around divestment, is that something that GAO's been concerned about in a broader context before, or did this A-10 study really, really bring that to light?
Well, in my portfolio, you know, I look at force structure and readiness issues, not so much the acquisition side. And so when we got to this point, we started conferring with our folks that do acquisition and started looking at sort of where the department was with a lot of its systems. And again, this capacity, the notion that we need a lot of stuff now and that a lot of it is aging versus, you know, capability, buying new stuff, we started this is going to keep coming up. And so we thought it made sense for us to sort of put this mark in the ground and say, DOD, maybe you ought to think about setting some rules for this to keep from these things from getting sort of pushed back at you from the Congress. The department did not agree. They do not want to do that. They not concur with that recommendation.
Right. As you said earlier, this was a budget-driven decision. But as far as estimating the amount of money that you'd actually save by getting rid of the A-10, you also found the estimates the Air Force had been giving Congress weren't credible, or at least didn't meet best practices for being credible, if there's a meaningful difference between those things. Tell us why.
Yeah, I mean, I could go down that rabbit hole pretty far, but I'll save you from that. We have various aspects we look at in cost estimates, but what they did was pretty simple. They had a bunch of Air Force leaders together, and they looked at various missions, and they said, okay, we've been told to prioritize modernization, and let's look at the cost of all these various missions. And the A-10, you know, in a situation where you're prioritizing modernization, it's nearly 40 years old, many of them, it didn't fare real well. And so they said, well, how much can we save? And what the Air Force did was go into its program, the Future Years Defense Program, and say, how much is in there for the A-10? And that's fine for a broad brush sense of savings, but it left things out. You know, there are things you might have to do if you don't have the A10 that weren't part of that cost estimate. And it could have overstated or understated how much you would save. So it doesn't give you the kind of fidelity that you need for, you know, to really identify how much you'd save. It's probably in the ballpark, but there'd be costs that probably were not contemplated, and there may be additional savings that weren't contemplated.
And obviously you can't take all of that money out of the FITIP, because one of the things that they've been arguing for is to take their existing A-10 maintainers and move them to the F-35. So that alone is probably a fairly big expense.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, the Air Force has got an in-strength challenge as well. And they're short maintainers already. They'd already started making some of these changes. So sometimes the savings, as you know, in the government is actually a transfer. But the Air Force is quite short on maintainers. Absolutely.
Back to your recommendations. You mentioned earlier that one of the key ones had been kicked to the curb. Any you feel like you've made any headway in convincing either the Air Force or larger DOD about what needs to be done here?
You know, I think despite the Air Force not concurred with our contention that they needed more information should they bring back this proposal to divest the A-10 to really walk through some of the issues that I've described here. The Air Force responded that they felt they had done that and that their analysis, and I'm quoting here because I think it's important for the listeners to hear this. The Air Force said the A-10 divestment was the most acceptable strategy to remain within Air Force budget authority while controlling risk across all mission sets. And by all, they mean Air Force mission sets primarily. And that may very well be true for the Air Force, but that we're not sure that it was necessarily true for across the department. Now, having their non-concurrence notwithstanding, they're doing some things that we mention in the report. Again, they have an integration group. They're talking about how they would meet some of the gaps that are being identified, but we just didn't have enough to go on yet about whether or not those would actually follow through. So despite their non-concurrence, they're actually doing some things that are steps in the right direction.
John Pendleton, Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at GAO, speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
Government organizations have always sought to serve our nation's citizens, but the rapid evolution of technology and sophistication of cyber threats have made this mission more complex. HPE has the people, the capabilities, and experience to deliver IT solutions to the right place at the right time, securely. HPE Enterprise Services is proud to partner with governments to transform their IT to better support the millions of citizens who rely on them every day. To learn how HPE can help you, visit hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next.
The Air Force Band turned 75 years old this year. Its 6 performing ensembles are still going strong, performing at many national events and military ceremonies. And there's a new way to hear them, as the band's commander and conductor, Colonel Larry Lang, explains. Federal News Radio's Eric White went out to see the band rehearse. He spoke with Lang about the band's history and its plans.
That's the sounds of Airmen of Note, the Air Force Band's jazz ensemble. They were gracious enough to invite us into one of their rehearsals at Joint Base Anacostia Bowling to listen to some of their music. Colonel Larry Lang is commander and conductor of the Air Force Band. He discussed with me some of the history of the band and the duties assigned to them.
We have come at a really opportune time because it's the 75th anniversary of the band. We were formed in 1941. As part of a number of bands that were stood up during the Army Air Corps days back in World War II as that was happening. So we have a long, rich history. And of course, it was started to support the troops and honor them in ceremonies. And the band has just grown and grown over the years. And now we have 184 members and 6 different ensembles that make up the Air Force Band. The group you just heard is the Airmen of Note. That's one of the 6 ensembles. They were actually formed to continue that World War II tradition of Major Glenn Miller, who many of your listeners will know as a very famous World War II swing band era leader. He was actually a civilian leader and was so enamored with what our troops were doing that he wanted to form a big band, become part of the Air Corps, and go overseas and support the troops. And we've continued that tradition ever since. We deploy members, for example, to the Middle East. We just had a group, a rock band, return from the Middle East, one of our other six ensembles, called Max Impact. And they probably performed for 50,000 coalition troops while they were there, as well as to reach out to the international community, in the different countries that they went to try to build those relationships and those partnerships with our friends and allies over there.
Music was always the first choice for Colonel Lang, but like all the airmen of the Air Force Band, along with their love for music, there was a desire to serve the country.
Your listeners can't see this, but my dad's picture is on the wall. He was in World War II as well. My stepdad was in the Army. And so that military heritage is part of my family. But to be honest with you, when I was going through school, my real goal was to be a performer. I got a degree in trombone and was performing professionally and teaching. I became a college band director. I was doing that for several years. And you'll find that to be true for a lot of our leaders, our commanders of the Air Force bands, but also our members. Most of our members have a bachelor's degree. Many have a master's. Several have a doctorate. Very highly educated team. Same with our conductors. We have 18 conductors for 10 bands that are stationed all over the globe. This is the premier Air Force band, as you might imagine, right here in Washington, D.C., and we're a little bit bigger than the others that are stationed all over the world. But I came in just because I was so excited about the opportunity to work with that level of professional musicians. That was my original goal. But then as I got involved, man, it was exciting to see the impact that we were having on our veterans, and that's one of our main mission in interest is to honor our veterans and to support them, all those who have served and are serving in our military. So we're always looking for ways to do that as we go out into the public and play concerts. We play the armed service songs. We play patriotic songs. We recognize those community members' service.
He says along with international outreach, one of the band's other main missions is representing the others who serve as well.
Every time we go out into the community, for example, we want to demonstrate the excellence that's part of every member's service in the military, especially in the Air Force. So it's that inspiration is part of it. So our mission is basically to honor, inspire, and impact those three simple but powerful words. So the honor part comes with the things that I've discussed about honoring our veterans and those who are serving. And then the impact and the inspiration comes when we're out in our communities, connecting with people. Sometimes we're the only military presence that a community will see, right? They see things on the news maybe that are kind of negative sometimes, but they don't get to meet a military member. And when they get to meet us, they get to see the professionalism, the professional demeanor, and the ability of the members of the band. All that combined with inspirational music, it really makes an incredible impact for our Air Force and our military.
Touring the band's building on the base, it was easy to see that they're a tight-knit group, similar to any military detachment or company.
They're really dedicated airmen. They love their country. They love to serve. And we get to be a real close team here because we work together so often. The band performs over 1,500 engagements a year. 800 of those are out at Arlington Cemetery, honoring our fallen warriors out there. And so, you know, when you work with someone like that day in and day out, you become a close-knit family. And so, I know everybody, of course, very well and about their families and how long they've been serving and all those things because that's part of it. It's part of my job as their commander to take care of them, to make sure they have everything they need to do their job, and to make sure they have a good future in the Air Force.
Recently, the band unveiled a new way to listen to them for their 75th anniversary, introducing the new Air Force Band app.
The mobile technology is the way to go these days. Everybody's looking things up on their cell phones, right, on their smartphones. And as a matter of fact, we had almost, I think it was around 700,000 visitors to our website last year. So that's becoming the primary way that people find out about what we're doing, about who we are, about when we're coming to their community. Perhaps they want to know more about me or one of our members. All of those things now can be found on this new app, because the app, all it does, it just draws that information from our website. So everything that's on our website immediately goes to the app. It's a USAF band on Google Play and on iTunes. And so all of your listeners can grab that app and find out everything they'd want to know about any of the six ensembles, maybe about tickets to a particular concert that we're having. They can even download or listen to all of our recordings. And we have over 150 recordings on our website. So you can listen to all kinds of different music from those six different ensembles. Just lots of great information about the band and pictures about everyone that serves here.
My romance doesn't have to have a moon in the sky.
However, if you'd like to see the band live to help celebrate 75 years, they've got you covered as well.
You know, we just celebrated our 75th anniversary, which was exciting, but it actually remains that way for the rest of this calendar year. So we got several concerts planned over the next 6 months honoring our 75th anniversary. We also have a very special concert on the 26th of August at the Air Force Memorial. We're just kind of talking about the Air Force history. You know, the Air Force has been around since 1947, and we want to just celebrate that history. So we're going to have the Airmen of Note, which is the jazz group that you just heard, plus the strings. The Air Force strings are going to join that group and form kind of a studio orchestra. And we're going to have some singers, and it's just going to be a great show of Air Force heritage. And then next month, we have another kind of a heritage event called a tattoo. It's a traditional military ceremony with pageantry and marching, and there's actually going to be the rock band Max Impact that I mentioned is going to be playing. Very patriotic, very martial and traditional in nature, but also a lot of fun. That's in September. People can find out more about that on our website.
Or the app.
Or the app. There you go. You're helping me advertise the app.
For FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM, I'm Eric White.
Colonel Larry Lang is commander and conductor of the Air Force Band, speaking with Federal News Radio's Eric White. The music you're hearing is from its jazz ensemble, Airmen of Note. Find out where they're playing next and see some pictures at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency of the Month Air Force, sponsored by HP Enterprise on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.